views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
When I was an undergrad, I went to Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And I remember coming home and, you know, having dinner with my family and grandmother and parents and my sisters at the dining room table. And so I made an announcement. I'm a Marxist. And my grandmother said, the more education they get, the dumber they get. But anyway, when I'm training in psychiatry and looking for the answer to be an effective psychiatrist with black people, looking for the answer to racism, and I remember attending a Black Power Committee meeting, and as a matter of fact, I was doing a fellowship in child psychiatry at that point. And I would get a voice. And, you know, if you get a voice in here, you need to see a psychiatrist. If you get a voice in here, I think that's God talking to you. And the voice would say, and I would be writing up cases at the end of the day, and the voice would say, go to a Black Power Committee meeting. You know, just quietly. It wasn't frightening. So when ministers say they get a calling, I kind of know what they mean. And so this would happen over and over and over again. Again, it was subtle, very subtle, nothing to shake you up or anything, because I didn't go to meetings. And so I finally went to a Black Power Committee meeting. And after the meeting, people were sitting in somebody's apartment eating African food. And a gentleman was on the other side of the room. And I heard this man say, mind you, I'm looking for further answers to racism. And I hear this gentleman over there in the other corner saying, racism is a system. And it's like my mind, you know, I'm looking for, you know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so I started talking to this person. The gentleman's name was Neely Fuller Jr. He wasn't a college professor. He was a guard at the Bureau of Engraving in the District of Columbia, where they print the money. And this man had started writing about racism in the mid-1950s when he was in the Korean War. And he said he was seated on a, you know, his station was on a radar site up in the mountains in Japan. And he started thinking about racism and thinking about what was going on in this country, in this part of the world. And he said that the language of segregation and desegregation didn't make much sense on that mountaintop. And he started thinking that racism is a system. Now I want to repeat after me, racism is a system. Now, I consider this gentleman one of the most profound thinkers of any color in the 20th century. Remember, we started the 20th century with our great sociologist, historian, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois. And Dr. Du Bois told us in his book, Souls of Black Folks, in 1903, that the problem of the 20th century is the question of the color line between the lighter and darker races of mankind. And then mid-century, Neely Fuller Jr. came along with his book, and I hope that everybody will get his book who doesn't have a copy. His phone number is 202. 484-5461. But it is a profound statement, analysis of looking at racism as a total system structure that functions in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, for the ultimate purpose of maintaining the power equation of white power over a relative non-white powerlessness. So being a psychiatrist, and, you know, at that point, that's the, what, mid-1970s, late 1960s, we would sit up in my apartment, and that was when, you know, you're at an age you can sit up and debate till 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning and get up and go to work. That's not the case today. But I would listen to the discussion of Mr. Fuller, and had another colleague, Dr. Carl Hutchinson. He's deceased, Chicago physician. He was training in orthopedic surgery. And Mr. Fuller had a beautifully hand-printed, might have had 1,800 pages of beautifully handwritten notes, documentation of his ideas that he carried around in his suitcase. Dr. Carl Hutchinson said, "I will type this manuscript in between surgical cases." And so he took the handwritten manuscript and typed it, and I spent the next 17 years saying, this has got to be printed, so, you know, got to be published. And so by 1984, it was published. But I started raising the question. Psychiatrists always, old school psychiatrists, I say new school psychiatrists, are just supposed to, oh, you're depressed? Well, let me write a prescription. You see, oh, you're anxious? Let me write a prescription and goodbye. I'll see you next time for another 15 minutes. I'm old school. I see all my patients for 1 hour. I believe that you have to talk to people and understand and then help them understand so that they can graduate from the psychiatrist and go forward because they now understand reality in a different way. So I started saying, well, why? If indeed, and I say racism as a dynamic, racism as white supremacy has been the reality that black people all over this planet have faced for the last 500 years. There's never been a moment, there's never been a minute, there's never been a day, there's never been a week where we have not been confronted with racism, white supremacy as a system. Never a half a minute. So I said, well, why would such a system be developed? And Mr. Fuller used to say to me, Francis, it's not important why, just learn what the system is. But, you know, the psychiatrist in me, I got to understand why. See, that's where little children are brilliant. Little two-year-old people, little three-year-old people, they start saying, why? Why? You know, and older people get annoyed, shut up. But don't ever tell a child. If a child is saying, why, mommy? Why, granny? Why? You may not know the answer. Just tell the child, I don't know the answer, but I'll try to find out for you. And if I don't find out and you study and learn, you'll find out. But the question, why, is what turns on the brain computer. The child is asking about cause and effect. And if you can begin to understand cause and effect, you begin to get a handle on dealing with reality. So I raise the question, well, why this reality of racism? As I said, my grandfather died in 1909. And he's talking about the problem of color, Dr. Du Bois talked about it in 1903. Every black person that has been of significance to black people has tried to grapple with what was happening, what was causing us to be oppressed, and raising issues or raising discussion about it. So I tell people, mind you, I have a question in the back of my brain computer, why would they do it? And I was actually in my kitchen cooking hands in dishwater, and the computer came with the answer. And what I started thinking about was things that were said within the system. Number one, the system said that we, as people of color, were minorities. And the other emphasis that was even greater than the factor, the numerical factor, was that we were supposed to be genetically inferior to people who classified themselves as white. Now, I say, spend as much time in school as you can. Spend as much time in the libraries as you can. Spend as much time in bookstores as you can. Reading. Repeat after me. Reading.
Reading.
Is more important.
Is more important.
Than watching TV.
Than watching TV.
Say it again.
Reading
is more important
than watching TV.
See, everything is in books. Everything is in books. And I say beware of these little small things that you can hold in your hand where you think you're getting as much information as if you're holding a book. Just beware. So with all of the reading and all of the going to school that I had done, I said, wait a minute. People of color on this planet are the overwhelming majority. Black, brown, red, and yellow people are 9/10 majority on this planet. The other thing, that we are supposed to be genetically inferior. And I said, well, wait a minute. See, in my mind, I'm talking to my, wait a minute. Black people, people of color, are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration to compared to people who classify themselves as white. And I said, I've got it. Just like that, standing in the kitchen, cooking hands in the dishwater. I said, this is the answer. So let me put it on the board. See if you all can see this. Let's say this is the planet Earth. Can you all see? Okay. So 9/10 of the people are black, brown, red, and yellow. 1/10 of the people have white skin. Instead of the people being genetically inferior, the people who can produce the black pigment melanin are genetically dominant. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you haven't taken a course in genetics, just look at our president, Barack Obama. The president's mother is white. His father is black. Because the ability to produce that black pigment is dominant, and the inability is a recessive genetic trait. So black plus white could only produce black. Are you all with me? So I said, now what am I doing? Let's say that this is planet Earth and this is Europe. and this is 1492. And Columbus started European people coming out and moving, you know, little boats coming out of Europe, beginning to circumnavigate the planet. Every place these white gentlemen landed, they found colored people. Colored people everywhere.
All right, all right. This is the Cold Breakers. This is Paradox. Also got DC on the line and T. Are you fellas there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Here.
Present.
Did y'all get any feedback or anything on your line? Is everybody clear? Am I clear?
Yep, you're clear. Am I clear?
Yeah, I can hear you. I just ordered that new mic, so I should be clear. You know, should sound better, hopefully, for the next program.
Indeed, indeed.
Well, that was Dr. Welding, Dr. Francis Cress Welding. I think she was actually speaking at a church, if I'm not mistaken. But very powerful. Good information. I'll leave it there. Good, very, very good information. I do appreciate all that she's given me as far as knowledge and information. I do appreciate it. Mom, she put that work in 50 years, right? Something like that. She
absolutely
put a lot of work in. Put a lot of work in.
It sounds like there's some feedback. Do you hear it?
Say that again.
Like some feedback, like a TV or a program, something on in the background. Okay, I think it went away. Go ahead. Yeah, you good. We good. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was me. That's what I was asking. So I wasn't sure you could hear it or not hear it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, I hate using this Bluetooth, man. But the title of the program is going to be The Perception of Protection in the Western World for Non-Whites. I hate that it rhymes. But it does. kind of funny. Some of the descriptions we're going to probably touch on, I think, is just asking some basic questions, such as who's in charge. And that's just kind of wrapped around, who's making these decisions at all levels in this environment, literally, you know, in America and really worldwide, at all levels. Also, who provides the protection? Just talking about maybe discussing a little bit on the military, possibly, or the police and other agencies, as well as each other, each individual person as well, protecting the system. Also, we'll probably touch on, and I spelled some of these words wrong, so I think I put statics, not statistics, but is the digital world safe? So anything online, I think they do a lot of metadata searching and housing, you know, giant farms of databases housing all your online information. I think, D, you may touch on IP addresses and other things as far as tracking and things of that nature, possibly. Also, just talk about maybe some race statistics, who provides that data, who also provides economic statistics. We may touch on propaganda, and how is that used or is that used on managing a society. And a few other questions. I want to read everything, but a few other things out there as well, if we're able to get to everything. I know Dr. Welding took up about 15 minutes, so... Do y'all have any just general thoughts, either on the title or just things that are going on in general in the world?
T, you have anything? Any comments about the clip?
Oh, get right into it.
Yeah, we can. I mean, as always, I mean, you know, that's the Oracle, you know, herself, and you know, everything that she says, I'm in complete agreement with. Somebody that dedicated themselves to studying the problem of racism and having a clear view about what we're dealing with now, and you know, as the headlines have shown us, it's full speed ahead, and the confusion has elevated in the sense that I think that victims of racism, we have found ourselves in a quandary where there is so much vitriol, so much anger and paralysis, mental paralysis, that I think that at this particular point, we're at a critical mass. It appears to be a critical mass, but maybe it's just you know, just the upward tick of the system. Everything seems to be kind of heightened right now, or at least that's the way it feels. But I don't know how real that is, in the sense of whether it's a real thing or whether, you know, it just seems to be something that everybody's always talking about now. But still, even though everybody's talking about it, there still seems to be a lot of different viewpoints, a lot of confusion about what the system is, how it works, and things of that nature. So I normally try to stick to clarity, focused on the problem, and you know, you can't never go wrong with listening to Dr. Wellesley break it down like she always does.
Yeah, she makes it. Well, I like the story she always tells anyway. So just as far as you know, her and her interaction with Mr. Buffalo. So
always, absolutely.
I want to definitely get that on our program. Make sure we try to get more of that on there. Just her telling the stories about her and Mr. Fuller, and even some other things we got to get on there too as well, that she talks about. Just so people can kind of get a sense of, you know, where a lot of this stuff is, at least where I'm coming from, as far as my base and my foundation. So, and still trying to learn, really. Still always learning, always, you know, either having to, either kind of bringing me back. I kind of, you know, I know I'm more scatterbrained than you fellas, but, you know, it was always good to hear her speak, just kind of to get my mind right. So it's always good to hear her. I feel always, actually, I feel, you know, it's painful actually listening to it sometimes, really. I was listening to it earlier today, some of her other stuff. And I hate that, you know, if she could really put things in some context now. I mean, it's really the same. It's weird because it's really the same old, but this is more, you know, this, you know, we're in a, it's, I hate to say it this way, but we're kind of in a time. I don't really know how to put it, in a sense that, what I think I'm seeing people, what they're feeling, or how they're reacting, or how they're responding, at least in the political sphere, like it's almost as if it makes me want to say, you know, it's throwback or things are a certain way, but it really isn't. So I hate to even say it, because, you know, if you listen to any of Dr. Wells and stuff, she's like saying this is what it is. So don't, you know, you can't act like it's new. And that's how, that's why, one reason why I was playing it. Because I keep thinking that it feels new, though. It feels like we haven't been here before, which is ridiculous when you think about it. You know what I mean? Like this empire is bigger, you know, it's bigger, it's growing, it's more integrated, it's more complex, it's more complex. You know, there's so much going on, and there's so much more propaganda being pushed, there's so much more misinformation being pushed out there as far as, you know, just what's going on in the world in general. I think keeping things kind of muddy benefits the people in charge, I think, you know. Kind of get you spending time talking about things that, if you understand what this is, in a sense, you would know when that time is here, I think. I think if anything was really threatening this environment, I don't think we'll be hanging out, is my whole point. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Could be wrong about that, you know. Could be wrong, but I doubt it. I think that these people take this stuff very seriously, and I think they're tracking and watching everything and everybody all the time. And so I think that if anybody wanted to do something, I don't really think they would, clearly historically they haven't hesitated that I can think of. So shoot, it's gonna be interesting when we may not be alive, we probably won't be alive, but it would be horrific, obviously. But at the same time, it would be interesting to see what the transition period would look like if the Western world was attacked. So it would be interesting to see even where we fall into place there, because this is our home. So we're gonna kill, and many of us will kill and fight to maintain it. And I think, you know, a percentage of us obviously would maybe switch sides and try to get some benefits over there, and, you know, maybe, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know all that war stuff gets complicated, but it's just something, I always think it's interesting when you try to push forward and think about what do things look like in the future as far as, you know, collapse or an invasion, even from a collapse perspective, you know, what is some of those things even look like? One of the questions I had listed was, you know, I don't even know if we at this point really understand who's in charge. I was, you know, you even think to yourself, well, if something happened, who do you go to anyway? Like, who do you call up if something happens? You know, and I don't know if those are some of the things that kind of tell you, like, say if your power goes out for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, who do you, are those people that you would generally go to anyway for help? Like, is everything kind of already baked in and we talk a certain talk? But when things happen, because of how things are structured, when things happen, you have a protocol, you have a process that you follow that's already pre-built into you, you know, from when you was a kid. And there's no other group that I know that you will call to help you. You know what I'm saying? If it's a fire or your water is shut down or there was a, you know, a storm or something, you know, you're going to call the federal government, you're going to call the state, and they're going to do whatever they're going to do. So it's just a strange thing when you think about infrastructure and who controls and manages it. And on the other side of that, you have people talking and speaking as if they can do something or they're doing something. So anyway, not to rant too much. Did y'all have any thoughts around the title as far as us perceiving that we have some sort of protection? Obviously, I think in some circles, clearly having color in your skin, some would consider that in itself being dangerous. Some would say you have no protection because you're non-white. But we don't know if that's true or not. We have non-whites in the military and police. And the police department and all the different security agencies, you know, we have survivalists, et cetera. We have people who appear that they will protect us, right? You know, when things happen, you know, if you own a store or if you, you're trying to get to work or whatever, there's things in place to make sure that you get to work, make sure you can go get groceries, et cetera, right? And that's not obviously in every environment, but in most environments, I think people are able to get a few resources. Where I'm coming from with what I just said is thinking of, like, I was looking at some stuff on Iraq today and looking at, you know, it's messy. That's all I was going to say. It's very messy in that place, based on what the Western TV tells me. But I was looking, just, you know, they were doing some things on Iraq and just showing some live, just streaming some live footage. And, I mean, it's devastating. But looking at the kids still trying to go to school, but the entire building has been bombed out, but the kids are still going to school. People are still looking for work. People are AWOLing out of the military, trying to find work to do. Others are finished with their duties and trying to find work and are having issues because there's pretty much, there's only so many jobs that are available at this point in time. There's really no leader there at this point in time. And so it's interesting, we have these examples all over the world as far as what it looks like when you see what they classify as failed states. When you see warfare, when you see new nations trying to develop themselves, and what does that look like, and who's involved? How independent is it really? You know, what's really going on? What's kind of behind the curtain? So, I thought, you know, Iraq is kind of on the forefront, so that's why I'm looking at it. But I know there's many, many other places that are dealing with. Dealing with the Western world and their control, influence, and power over the rest of the world. So that's just definitely one place that I thought was interesting when people generally talk about, you know, building nations within nations. People talking about what they can do, setting up systems within systems. And clearly, when you're under this particular empire, approval process is what's allowed. And it's just what it is. I mean, it's really kind of silly. Like I was telling you, DC, I swear, the more I try to get an understanding of how nations are being developed in this system, understanding how things are integrated at the global level and what that all looks like, and all the players that are involved in setting up places, it seems odd to hear people in this country talk about a lot of stuff. It almost seems criminal, even possibly.
What do you mean by criminal?
Just that, what should you be telling non-white people when you look at the world and its reality, and you say, "Well, I'm confused. If European nations, American nations, Canadian nations, they can go into places and just take what they want." Topple places, replace people. If they have their sheer level of power, they can terraform an area on the planet, redo entire places, back support, set up, run all these different game plans to make things appear and look a certain way, to ultimately get the most benefit out of it. When other people are speaking about it, as if that's not happening, as if they don't have that sort of power. And again, the caveat, not to say. Not, you know, it's never not to say do nothing. It's never not to say to put up fight. But in, you know, knowledge and understanding and study and reason and trying to get some clarity, to me, seems to be first, possibly, maybe not. Like, for example, right? When you look at what's going on in Iraq, from what the Western television tells me, really don't know what's going on there, but I'm gonna go with it. It's absolute chaos. You know, they were showing some footage of them trying to bomb a little town with the American tanks, but the Iraqis have the tanks, and they were bombing this town. Didn't know who they was bombing, though. They were just shooting them in the air because the video cameras were there. I mean, like, it was insane watching it. I mean, you see the disorganization, and I don't even know what I'm going to be looking at. It just looks like, so y'all don't even know what's going on. And I'm just thinking to myself, what is this? You know, so you have these great powers that give these states weapons and these ragtag military, supposedly, and they just out doing stuff. It's real. It just didn't seem real because, you know, is this what it's like when you're not being protected by whiteness, by the West? Is this what it looks like when they're redoing your area? Is this what it looks like when your leader decides to misbehave and ultimately you're going to be punished for it? Well, I think they were looking at some of the statistics coming out of Iraq, and you talk about most educated. I mean, the list is endless. Before 2005, the list was endless. So for the Western world to take that from the people because they felt like it, it's a strange thing when someone on this land says what they says or comes up with an idea, and I'm like, well, have you like vetted that out as far as the powers that be versus what you're really talking about? Not saying you can't do any of those things, and to be totally honest, what I'm personally waiting for is to see in action, right? I don't want to know about it. It shouldn't be on TV, it shouldn't be on the internet, it shouldn't be discussed. It should just be an action or an event, whatever that's going to be. And then I'm like, oh, we got some colored folks that's really putting this, just really trying to make sense, make things, you know, challenging. The point of that even is what the repercussions are. And I always wonder sometimes is that when we know how violent and ruthless they are, does that in itself keep us in somewhat a lot where we'll push, small pockets will push, the 2%, the 3%, the outliers will push against it because they have to. It's in their DNA. They have to fight. They can't take it. And they're pushing and they're pushing. But outside of that, you know, 1, 2, or 3% of the population of non-white, everyone else is either complying out of fear, complying out of being beat down so much, or complying trying to get close to the whiteness and trying to get approval. You know, we have many, many different scenarios and many different reasons to that. But the thing is, if they're protecting me and at the same time violating me, how does the brain process that? How do you start to compartmentalize and segregate your mind out to allow yourself to function? And at the same time, you can even pretend that they're not in charge for some reason, or say it in a different way that feels better, and not really recognize the level of power. Now, I don't know if you should recognize the level of power. Does that make you more weak, or should you just go in blindly and just, you know, go all the way out? I don't know. Historically, I'm not totally sure I'm not sure historically, you know, what has it really done? You know, I don't even know if and I think you had mentioned before, DC, I don't even know if the capacity is there to be able to, you know, just the ability to put that much blood on your hands. I don't even know if that exists. You know, you look at some groups that are out there who are fighting back in different forms, and even theirs seems to be small. You know, it seems to be desperation. It doesn't seem that organized. It really seems more ineffective and a nuisance. It's blood, it's death, but it still seems to be like, I mean, I don't know. It's just interesting what you hear and what information you're saying. And then you kind of pull back and look at, like, well, seems to be kind of a small thing that's being handled. Like, I was thinking about when the Europeans were going west in this nation, and how it was pretty violent. And I'm sure if somebody was writing about it back then, they was probably thinking, man, we're going to lose. You know, these guys out west is too tough, right? And I can see somebody writing during that time frame saying, man, it's hard, it's complicated, it's tricky. I don't know what we're going to do. This is going to be the end of America. Like, I can see someone commentate real time, even like they do now. People, non-whites talk real time like these people didn't literally shut down most of the planet. Not like these people have a navy that controls the waterways. For the most part, they got to negotiate and other things of that nature, but they pretty much run the waterway. That's 3/4 of the planet. I don't know what you do with that information. I could be wrong. I don't know. But I think it's interesting that during the time frame when they was massacring indigenous people in this land, that they were fighting back. They were killing a lot of them. And they were setting up all these forts all through the West, all through the Midwest, forts everywhere, setting up forts, protecting the settlers. They're coming in, and they have to be thinking to themselves, man, this is tough. But look at where we are now. You know, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, massacred. Had no problem doing it. No issues doing it. Actually did it, named places after them, and integrated into the, you know, took the names and everything and, like, merged with it. I just, like, I'm just thinking to myself, that's just, I go back to who's providing protection. I mean, who's in charge? You know, who's pushing the propaganda? And how do we deal with all of that? But I'll pause right there.
What say you, T?
There's a lot of, there's certainly a lot of logistics, military hardware and planning that goes into building a nation. To me, building a so-called black nation, or however you want to dub it, I think if you're not talking military, that's one of the first and primary points. If you're talking economics and not military is your first and your basis of things, I think you're going to have some serious problems. I mean, just being realistic, not trying to be fatalistic or be what, you know, some people might construe even our program to be kind of negative and discouraging. There are obviously things that that people can do within the system to try to survive and make a way for themselves or for others or as a group. But as far as building a nation with its own sovereign government, currency, what have you, it's gonna take a lot, and I think military will be the basis for it. Now, with that being said, what's interesting is that when you look at across the globe, that the U.S. sets up, they set up government, they set up public government. What's ironic is that, you know, the mainstream media puts out this propaganda saying that the elections were interfered in by the Russians. But that's what the U.S. does globally, interferes in an election. Not only do they interfere in elections, but they depose leaders, they set up coups, they assassinate leaders, government officials. So it's just ironic to hear them keep talking about the Russians interfering in the U.S. elections, which, in fact, another thing people need to realize, I think, is that there is no government. It's just, all of this is a sham. It's a show. Get your participation. The government that was originally set up, I guess, if you want to call it that, set up on this landmass, is long gone, at least based on the principles that originally was set up for. Thinking about it, I was thinking about it today, it crossed my mind that you have a government, so-called, that has been established to carry out various, agendas. But the thing of it is that what I notice is that the majority of so-called white people are comfortable with a certain level of injustice, even for their own people and for the world in general, as long as they have a place at the table, a seat at the table, so to speak. But they're fortunate that what's going to end up happening, what I foresee is that, and Martin Luther King, we talked about him on our last show, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., talked about him on our last show, like I said, named after Martin Luther King, who posted the 95 Theses on the door of the Roman Catholics back in the 14th century, I believe. Anyway, I guess my point is that what's going to start to happen is that, because what I want to say is that we're being, black people so-called are being kept here and farmed as a distraction of the bigger pictures, which is that the powers that are want full and total control, I mean, over every aspect of people's lives. That it all, ultimately it doesn't matter what skin color you are, but they've set up the system to allow for certain privileges. And we've alluded to this with, you know, the Bacon's Rebellion, for instance. So they set up certain privileges within that. And so black people here, so-called black people, serve as a distraction. You know, last time I checked, all the Syrians, the Iraqis, the Afghanis, the Libyans, all these folks that are so-called immigrating or flocking to Europe, all the terror attacks that we're seeing, so-called, it's not, these black people, so-called, aren't being allowed in on their own. In other words, they don't have the latitude and the power to just simply come into France, come into England, come into Spain, Greece, Germany, Belgium. They don't have the access to do that. So as far as last time I checked, these are so-called white people who are allowing these policies, passing these so-called laws, allowing this to happen. But the reaction that you're seeing from so-called white people, whether in those countries or over here or globally, for the most part that I've seen, is toward the black people, so-called black people who've been allowed to come into these countries, and not directed toward the people that are in charge of these nations, the lawmakers, what have you. So that's what I mean by it's a distraction. And what I'm getting at is that as long as so-called white people continue to focus on symptoms, you know, the fact that these so-called black people are allowed into these countries to do whatever it is they're going to do or not do, as long as they focus on that, they're going to continue to have their rights and their privileges revoked from it. You know, the powers that are just abiding their time until they get their full control grid in place. And so it's convenient to have a scapegoat and so-called black people for the problems, for the poverty, for the crime. It's convenient to have these scapegoats set in place so that the visceral reaction is directed not toward the powers that are, which are white people, but toward so-called black people. And so as long as white people continue to allow that to drive their reaction, they're going to end up losing a lot of things, gun rights being one of them. And I'll leave the floor there.
Yeah, that's good analysis, man. You know, one of the things that have became painstakingly clear to me over the last couple of weeks as these new headlines have came out about now we have the victim of racism, Charlena Lyles, that mother of five, and I think that either she was pregnant with another child, and you know, same thing, murdered by race soldiers, police officers, whatever you want to call them, slave catchers. The murder of Philando Castile. And, you know, I think they just showed a different video of that particular murder. And I don't need to watch it. I don't need to have any more evidence about what's going on out there. I think that, you know, if you're listening to this program, I would tell people to protect your mind and your hearts, because what you're seeing is something that they're normalizing right in front of our eyes. The system, what we call the system of racism, white supremacy, is a system of psychological warfare that is brought out within physical contact amongst people. These people have defined themselves as white, tribalized themselves as white globally, and have effectively went about the business of basically, just alluding to what you said earlier, Paradox, they have terraformed the planet. And what we mean by terraform, they have created a culture to where people cannot even survive in environments now without succumbing to their way of doing things. This is just the fact of life. And us being the victims of the system, primarily being here when our ancestors were enslaved, and they have designated us as the underclass here. You know, there is a lot of confusion because we're walking around in open space and we see things that happen to us, but we do not know how to react in a certain unified way because we do not have the same pain points. So some of the things that we alluded to before, people have different things that are affecting them within the system, but they don't look at it as the primary objective. Is especially if you are a person that is not white, your life at the end of the day do not matter. You don't have to sit up here and do a whole lot of marches to try to convince people of that. If you believe in the Creator, if you believe in universal law, then there is no convincing of that. And the fact that people feel like they have to convince someone of their so-called humanity is psychologically damaging. You know, I feel bad for the children, because when they're trying to understand what they're seeing, the stimuli, the information, and especially how things are broadcast on a regular basis, it's devastating. And you know, because we as victims, because we've been designated as people that they call black, and you know, you can speak it all you want to, this is something that's forced upon us. This is not something that we agreed to. We didn't agree to this classification. You're going to call people that you have taken from tribes over here, enslaved, and tribes in Africa where they had their own names, their own languages, and you called these people this. And you have treated them this way. And the history is what it is. Hence the reason why we are not able to reconcile with it. No wonder we're dealing with mental illness. That's the reason why we're so confused. And if you honestly look at this from a general perspective, it's almost amazing that this is even held together, especially dealing with victims of racism and white supremacy. But like I said, this is a system of psychological warfare. The primary objective is to keep you confused. But those that don't comply, we physically handle you. Your group is basically dispersed. You don't agree on things. You don't have an actual formation as far as ideals. So we monitor you because we are being monitored. That's one thing you can rest assured. If you think that white people don't monitor black people on a regular basis, you're sadly mistaken. I know it seemed like we're not that important, and I think that people kind of underestimate that. I'm going to have a stream of consciousness, but just to kind of give you an idea, fellas, do you remember the article I sent to you basically about the guy that said that everybody lies? They wrote a book called Everybody Lies about the Google searches. Yeah. About how he studied white people. This is white people now. Studied Google searches. Now, we're already talking about probably someone that is already an unabashed racist. Now, this is a person that studied economics. When he went into Google searches, he said, this is a person that basically studying just whatever people type into Google, that mostly what people are studying or talking about is racism. But we don't have any racists. You ask the average white person, are you a racist? Or is there such, I'm not racist. But everybody is talking about racism. Everybody is studying racism, including white people. How do we live in a system like this where we can't even tell what the truth is? It's like an actual other side of the mirror. It's like what we present on the outside is fantasy. And what he is pulling back the veil. Okay, this is what the real deal is. So, you know, by the analysis in Google, he said it's easy to see that Donald Trump was going to win this. Like, this is not a surprise. But clearly, you know, we already had the Oracle, which is Dr. Francis Kress Welsing, already basically produced the evidence that he was going to win a year prior to the election. So, having clarity about this system is what is needed the most right now. Before anything. Before you want to go in and get into economics, before you want to be like white people, before you want to kind of pattern yourself around these people that are constantly destroying the planet right now, think about what you're saying to yourself. Think about how they have developed their mentality and how they have basically isolated themselves into this group. Like, this is something that they need to be studied. And, you know, what's so funny is because a lot of people always say, well, what's the answer? What's the answer? And, you know, what I would suggest is you have to begin with the analysis of what this particular problem is, the gravity of it. The gravity has to get to you. You have to understand. What we're talking about, what we're asking for, is to ask these people to do the total opposite of what they needed to do to take over the planet. I'm not talking about black people defending themselves. Defending yourselves would not stop white supremacy. It won't. Defending yourself, you have to have an aggressive, it has to be an overwhelming force. It has to be something like War of the Worlds. Something that's going to change the strata, the structure of how things are done. Because what has happened prior to us being here has already happened. World War II, World War I, the Native American Wars, the Spanish American War, and all that type of deal. That has already happened to where the conquest has already been complete. We talk English. They have designated us to an actual classification. And we're fighting over that. We're fighting over a classification that another group of people have given us. Think about that for a second. We're trying to tell people that you're not really black, but you don't even know what tribe you're originally from. You don't even know what your bloodline truly is. And I don't care whether you think you're from here or whether you think you're from Africa. It doesn't matter. You have no idea of what your ancestors spoke 1,000 years before this time period. That's not unless white people tell you. That's the gravity of the situation. That's the power of the situation. And for the ones that do know, they're running to be white. To the ones that are already in Africa, the ones that are already in other places where there are people full of color, they're trying to come here to practice like white people. That is the sickness that has basically infected this planet right now. But we want to be white. We want to be white. Because that's all I hear. That's what I hear when I hear people discuss about solutions within the system of racism and white supremacy. I will repeat this, and I'm going to repeat this very succinctly. Either the system exists or it doesn't. Either there's racism and white supremacy, or there isn't. Grapple with that reality. I mean, fellas, we sit like 15 minutes away from the White House. If you think that we're lying, if you go to Capitol Hill and you look at the people that's in there, most of those people that are making decisions, that are talking on a regular basis, are white folks. How many black senators do we have? Like, I mean, come on now, let's just be honest. Are there even black governors? Is there one black governor or two? I mean, the things that we need to be honest about, we're not being honest about. Like, it's sitting right in front of your face. It's sitting right in front of your face. We are not the decision makers in this particular environment. So that is what we have to begin with. Analysis, the gravity of what the problem is, and then be able to show empathy towards other victims, because we know that what they're dealing with is a reaction. And then to be able to start to move in a certain way to break this thing down by the psychological system that it is, and to start to react with thought, speech, and action to counter this system, so it can no longer be doable on this particular planet. That is the actual workable solution. Now, if white folks find out that we are actually trying to counter the system, they may decide that, hey, full stop, we need to basically have an elimination process. Instead of slowly eliminating them like we are doing right now through the prison complex plantation and through diseases and health issues and all this economic strifling that they're doing to our people right now, they just say, well, we just need to just basically declare, well, full stop. I mean, either way it go, white supremacy is an active amoeba system. It's active. It morphs. It moves. It swallows. Just sort of like what you were saying earlier, Paradox. It swallows ideas. It then makes it their own. It changes your language. It buys you out. It makes you think that whatever you're doing is basically countering the system when you're basically helping it to maintain the system. That's what we're dealing with right now. That's how all-encompassing it is right now. No, I do not think that this system that it cannot be defeated. I do believe that this system can be defeated. And in fact, I believe this system is on its way to being defeated, whether it's by its own destruction, or what is basically us basically maintain basically doing things psychologically to eliminate this system. But anyway, we have a break coming up, and we shall be back in just a moment. We are the Codebreakers.
Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
called Rikers? DC, did you want to finish up?
No, I'm good. I just wanted to just kind of reiterate that the gravity of this particular system and the hold that it has on our minds and our bodies cannot be understated. This is a system that can be defeated, by the way, but it's going to take us being honest, being empathetic towards our own people, and to be able to begin to deconstruct this psychological virus mentally that has basically streamed out through consciousness for black people abroad globally.
Do you find that it's interesting that there is a percentage of people on the planet who actually is actively fighting back, who's it seems for five centuries, if not further. I know we kind of live, that's the kind of space that we're going to live in. Literally these last five centuries, all over the world, you've had a minority of people, a minority of the majority of non-white, actively fighting. You know, the indigenous people of this land gave their lives trying to stop it every day, day in and day out. You know, making deals, getting weaponry, sacrificing. And, you know, it's just a... What I find interesting is that they had to kill for this. You know, nobody was laying down. You know, they went to the continent, they had to kill. They came to this landmass from the Arctic, you know, all the way down, you know, claiming and taking. And much of it they had to fight to get it. They had to be conniving and sneaky. You know what I mean? It's interesting that when you look at their behavior and what it took, you know, and really when you think about it, that's what I was bringing up. Really, if you look at, you know, I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think the continent sees Europe. I don't know what the numbers look like as far as resources, but I don't think Europe has any resources, if I'm not mistaken. Y'all can look, we can look that up, I guess, get whatever numbers they put out. But you know, when you think about what even what Dr. Webb said with the 1/10 to the 9/10, you're just thinking about them going just to the continent, for example. Just stay right there for a second. If that place stops, if they leave that place alone, if that place comes together and pushes back, then these things are going to take place. You know, I think that Europe will starve to death. See, I don't, you know, I hate that we're not, you know, aliens in a spaceship or, you know, they haven't got to us yet. So we can kind of look at it from the outside. I mean, it's very difficult to be inside trying to get an understanding of an empire, especially when all your life you've been told that's not what this is. And to tell you about these old stories of Roman times, and that was back then, but really you're really living in it and should be studying this. Not wasting time thinking about a lot of the older things when it comes to what we're dealing with. But anyway, it's a scary thing to think that we have this place that they call Africa, this continent with all these nations that they set up, and much of the resources, if I'm not mistaken, much of it goes to Europe. And I'm just thinking, like, well, what would they do without that? What are they willing to do to maintain that? You know, And even when the British and the French, not to get into too much history, but even when the British and the French and the Spanish them needed labor and also used this land to grow goods and services, that also is telling you that there were no resources there as well. So I just wonder mentally, you know, them knowing, because, you know, one thing we talk about all the time is that they monitor everything, they count everything on the planet, how much water is available, how much... You know, how much farmable land is available? You know, what do the numbers look like for the next 10, 20, 40, 100, 200? And they do the coal numbers, and I think they talk about 200 years of coal, supposedly, in the ground. You know, 500 years of natural gas all over the world that can still be tapped. So they're managing and discussing and thinking about resources. And much of the resources, it's not there. It's not in Europe. Obviously, a lot of it is in this country, even though they've stripped a lot of it out. So you know, you think sometimes how real a lot of this stuff is, meaning that if nations decided, if people as large groups started to reject whiteness, you know, you're talking about tens of millions of people starving to death that are white. So them knowing that already, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, if they already know that, what are they willing to do? You know, what are they, you know, you think about what they was willing to do to get to where they are now. You know, and you think about the energy. Just think about it. Everybody who listens to this call probably has possibly paid some taxes, meaning that your energy, your time that you've given has went into building this country's military. This supposedly, from what the Western media tells me, this is supposed to be the largest military on the planet. What the government websites tell me, they spend like $1 trillion a year. I don't know what that number even means, but that sounds like a large number, and I guess that means something, and they got a lot of weapons all over the world, and all these small towns in America build a lot of these missiles and tanks, et cetera. And just thinking about the amount of spying that they do all over the world, just tracking and monitoring constantly. And I'm not sure if, I think it's hard to process that. Y'all have any thoughts around that, or? But did y'all want to move on away?
I just want to share right quick. I was watching, this is a stupid movie in my opinion. Kind of funny how stupid it was to a degree. But The Great Wall with, what's the old boy's name?
Matt Damon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jason Bourne. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know if I can get too much into Hollywood, but it pretty much, if you look at it, for what it is, it's basically showing the journey of the European define what they call black powder, and how they basically traveled the Silk Road to China to find this mystical thing they call black powder, which is gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was invented like the 17th century in China for fireworks, for celebration, warding off evil spirits, things of that nature. But then it shows how they acquired this black powder through trickery, and were able to bring that back to Europe and create weaponry. It kind of makes you wonder. I know DC has sent me a video some time ago called, I believe it was called Germs, Steel, and what was it?
Guns, Germs, and Steel.
There you go. And so it just goes and shows how, I mean, how drastically different things might have been if Europeans had not gotten a hold of gunpowder. And because, I mean, obviously, they used the gun to rule the planet and even fight more primitive people that even beat them when they had weapons, like the Zulu. You know, they got whipped plenty of times, the British, by the Zulu. And even show lots of skirmishes over here in North America, as they call it, that went down with, like, the Seminole Indians, the so-called Seminole Indians, the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Blackfoot, you know, you name it. So I just thought I would mention that. But you want to shed some light on that documentary, DC?
Well, I mean, basically, you know, it was the advent of how he said that it was just a conversion of time, weaponry, and mindset and scarcity that developed in Europe that made the European, which these people now call themselves white, which is unbelievable, by the way, that these words still exist in a scientific world that we live in now. It's just the fact that we still say white, black, this and that, other, I'm a black person, you're a white person, it's just beyond me. You know, I know that these are real deals. I know that this is real. I just think that the fact that we're calling ourselves this when it's basically a brand new term as far as how people are classified or forced into a classification. These are not terms that existed 400, 300 some years, most of human existence anyway.
You don't believe that whites are fighting each other to get rid of the word white?
But that's what I'm saying. So back to the documentary, right? So he spoke about survival primarily. Like, Europeans wanted to survive. Their motivation for conquering people was protection. So the 13 colonies, right, which is a very small portion of the United States of America, people don't really realize how small it was. The reason why people don't believe that Maryland, Virginia, and all this is the South, which it is, by the way, is because they don't think about the United States as 13 colonies. They think about the United States as Texas and Louisiana and Alabama and the rest of the South, which came at a later time, which was basically dominated by the French and the Spaniards. See, America was divvied up by colonization, so it was colonized by different European groups that didn't have a concept of whiteness as of yet, by the way. And basically, this group, which is forged by war and conquest, had to basically border up and try to survive by creating sea from shining sea. If you look at the song that people sing all the time, which is the Star Spangled Banner, it's giving you like a war cry, you know, bombs bursting in air, you know, that our flag is still there. It's like a declaration of America's conquest. This is the reason why we did it, was to dominate, to protect, to be able to, you know, practice our particular religion, which is white supremacy, by the way, but to be able to do some of the things that we want to do without being infiltrated by our borders. That's the reason why California, the acquisition of California is important. The acquisition of Hawaii was important during the 50s. The acquisition of some of the actual Puerto Rican island is important. I think it's San Juan off the coast of Japan and all that, which is basically U.S. territory. All of this is strategic. Those are U.S. territories, so basically those are basically prohibitors of the United States, but they're not continental. Same thing with Alaska. Those are strategically placed around the globe to where America has a foothold in these places where they're practicing racial colonization of these groups of people that are there naturally, plus people that come there, basically that are white people that come there to live and to practice their particular culture drain as far as like making people now part of the whole American system. See, I think what we was not able to identify, and this is for the people that are not white, by the way, what we was not able to identify with the group that classified themselves as white was that this is survival for them. So to answer your question, what drives this group, and it's very clear, is that this is for their survival. When you hear people speak on CNN about, you know, how to protect their interests, how to protect America, you know, the reason why we're so against immigration and to protect that particular borders and things of that nature has a lot to do with whiteness, and it has a lot to do with them basically trying to protect their genetics. It's very, very, very critical that they do this. And that's what drives this group that have classified themselves as white, created a system of racism, which is basically stacking the deck and basically driving the people that have the most genetic potential to annihilate them through sex, which are black people, the people that they have classified as black, by the way. When we have people like this that are basically steadily driven to do certain things, then you're going to have to understand the gravity of the situation, that they would rather destroy this planet than to see anybody else basically take hold of it. That is basically a fact. They have reimagined it time and time and time and time again. The only group that imagined this Dysporian type of fantasies and futures, you know, where you see these futures where everything is basically desolate, there's no resources, people are desperate, the system is basically eating itself, or they have destroyed the planet by nuclear warfare. Just think about it. Just even building bombs that's going to possibly destroy the planet if they launch them, even if they're doing it to defend themselves, should let you know how deep this rabbit hole goes. So even if you defeat white people, they can still send off a bomb to basically nuke the planet. That's how critical this is. We have a group that can basically destroy the planet, basically, if they was to be taken over. So even if you hostily take... I'm sorry? Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I'm sorry, I had been waiting for a while, and I don't know how long y'all show is, so I want to try to get in here real quick, but I really been enjoying y'all conversation. And I just wanted to add a few quick things. Speaking on what you speaking on as far as the genetic survival, that should be for anybody who knows anything about Dr. Wilson, is that is her number one priority, to let us know, if we don't know, that it is a fear of genetic annihilation.
Absolutely.
That's the number one way to get rid of them, following nature, because nature is getting rid of them as well. Some of the other things that I wanted to build on, and I don't want to take too much of your time, so y'all let me know when I need
quit. Go ahead.
But also building on, because this is the first time I done heard of y'all. I ran across y'all via Scotty. Shout out to Scotty. The young brother, he sound young. I'm not saying that he's young. I'm a young brother myself. But the fast-talking brother, I should say. That brother was speaking about... he was asking questions about what should we do. Well, the Haitians showed us what we should do. You know, it's not in us to be just bloodthirsty like these Europeans are. But when you dealing with people who have no regard for your children, your family, your wife, or anything of that nature, for that particular moment, you have to get in the same train of thought that they're in. Right now, we're in that same train of thought. Think about what just happened this past November with the election. Now, I'm not no Hillary Clinton supporter, but if any of y'all watch the politics that went on, we know that Hillary won the popular vote, meaning the vote that came from the people. I particularly think that the Trump came in as a backlash from Obama. Now, me personally, and I don't want to step on nobody's toes, but I don't feel like Obama did anything for us. But when you're talking about these white people, they see it as a powerful black man sitting up in our White House. When I say our, I'm speaking from their point of view, sitting up in our White House telling us what to do. So all of this stuff that we're seeing right now is a backlash, where you see all of these white terrorists running around, although the mainstream media continuously talk about the Muslims and what have you, and ISIS and Russia. Here in America, we have these white terrorists running around killing people. I don't know how many of y'all done seen it today, but it was a young brother who just, and it's crazy because they already done gave George Zimmerman a verb. They done made his name a verb. They saying this guy, George Zimmerman, this boy. You see what I'm saying? So we have these things that we have to do. If you not no bloodthirsty brother, that's not how we built. That's not how our DNA works, and I understand that. But all at the same time, understanding the time, because I know he was talking about history,
we have a history of protecting ourselves and not just in a reactionary way. When you're talking about the deacons of defense, these was older brothers who came back. They was Vietnam veterans and World War II veterans and what have you, and they trained all of the young brothers and the young sisters in the neighborhood on how to use firearms. You know, we've done this before. He also spoke about small pockets of people fighting back. It's going to take a little bit more than small pockets, because when you dealing with an army, like he stated, the Army, the Marines, the Navy, and I myself, before I learned anything, I was involved in the Navy. I didn't know what I was getting into. I just wanted to get up out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's where I'm from, by the way. I'm sorry. I should have said that earlier. I just wanted to get out of the trouble that was going on in Chattanooga. But what I find out is that wherever we go, we are greeted first and foremost with white supremacy. All of us don't know that's what we're being greeted with when we're greeted, because a lot of us take off on these adventures at a young age and we just seeing the world. But this is why we have to stay in contact with our younger generation, because me myself, I didn't have that. Most of my uncles was gone on to whether they went to the Navy, the Marines, or the Army, or the Air Force, or what have you. And it was a bunch of women that helped raise me. Now, before anybody get any kind of ideas, I'm not saying nothing wrong with women raising me, because they taught me everything I needed to know. But when we talking about being a man, I didn't have that particular aspect in my life, because my father was doing some crazy stuff on his own. So we have a whole history of things that we need to do. We just have to get a whole group of people to activate those things that's already been granted to us. Now I would like to know what y'all brothers think about that.
Paradox T, you guys want to share?
First of all, thank you for calling in, brother. Appreciate your thoughts.
Absolutely.
Good to have people call in. Shout out to Chattanooga. I've been out there before. Beautiful, beautiful area. Been out to, I think, Overlook Mountain is out there as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Yes, sir, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Okay, yeah. Absolutely. So, and with respect to solutions, I think we all agree on this call that there are solutions. If you're talking about military, which I think would be the ultimate in terms of a solution, because even if you look at the history of the what later on became the United States of America, it was forged through military. Economics came later. They wanted a direction of King George III, and, you know, they were being abused. And they actually, what's interesting, they forged the identity of whiteness during that time frame, part of it during that time frame. So not only were they trying to find a national, I'm kind of giving that background, I'll get to my point, but not only were they trying to form a national identity for themselves, because they were all separate individual states, colonies. You know, some people were Georgians, I guess Virginians or Virginians. You know, some people were Marylanders, some people were Yankees from New York. So they were citizens of their states. And so the so-called founding fathers, what they call so-called founding fathers, the framers, they wanted to forge a national identity. And part of that process was to create the identity of whiteness, because and I'll make this little history tidbit quick to get to my point. United States of America, if you look at any other national government, like you have the United States of Mexico, the United States of Brazil, you have these different areas, but you have United States of America. America is a continent, north, south, central, in the adjoining islands. So it doesn't have a national name like Mexico or Brazil. And the reason for that is because they were battling state sovereignty versus a national identity. No one really wanted to ascribe to any particular national name. In fact, they even proposed coming up with calling it Colombia after Columbus, United States of Colombia, for instance. But they couldn't really do it, so it seems to me that whiteness ended up being the route that they would take and just use the United States of America as an identifier, but whiteness falls up underneath of that. Or maybe it was on top of it, but I say to say that unless we forge some type of identity, and this is just my opinion, outside of blackness, which was created for us and imposed upon us, it'll be hard to come together, I think, to a certain degree. I think there is a tipping point. I don't know what that might be. I mean, I don't know how much death and killing it takes of our people for us to come together. But I think there is a tipping point. What that will be, we're interested to see. But once an identity is forged, then you can start to come together and create some sort of military apparatus. Obviously, anytime you talk military, you know, if you're talking like the Black Panthers or what you mentioned about the these individuals, I guess they were ex-military.
Yeah, that's what preceded the Black Panthers, the Deacons right. of Defense.
Right, there you go, Deacons of Defense. Anytime Absolutely. You start to come together in a militaristic fashion, that, is, of all things, sends up red flags to so-called right. white people immediately. So stuff will be very covert.
But can I add something? Because I want to, if I may, I would like to, when each of you respond, I would like to not give a rebuttal, but just kind of add on to what you're saying. And you're absolutely right as far as, because we done seen economics thrive through our community. Most people think of Black Wall Street. First thing they come up to their mind is Tulsa, Oklahoma. Well, we had Wilmington, we had Atlanta. You know, I mean, and it's, I could go on and on. There were several places, but the one thing that we didn't have was a joining military, because when each of those places were attacked, initially they was took down. And they all had help through the federal government. So I agree exactly on what you're saying, and that's why I was asking, how many of y'all brothers take some of your brothers and your sisters, nephews, and nieces, if not to the gun range, just out to the pasture, the way they can learn how to shoot cans. Little small things like this. One bullet takes down one man. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, yeah, I agree. Go ahead, you can get
it, DC. Yeah, just real quick, and you know, I think that maybe I understand exactly what you're saying. I am of the idea that now that globalization has taken form, There are a list of things that will be an issue as far as, and I'm not talking about defending yourself. I think that what you're speaking about, if I'm not mistaken, is primarily defense, correct? Like defending yourself and your family?
Not necessarily. I mean, that should be the first and foremost, but in the, because it's a lot of people that believe that we're in a war. I'm not saying that we're not in a war, but the only thing that I say is that if you're in a war, you have two parties. And when I say two parties, I mean two sets of people, regardless of color and race, that's engaging with each other. As of right now, and for the past almost 500 years, we've just been recipients. So I don't say that we're in a war. I say that we're being abused. Now, when you, the brother brought up an interesting he brought up an interesting topic when he was talking about small pockets. Small pockets of people who fought white supremacy. Think about Malcolm X. Think about Marcus Garvey. Think about Martin Luther King. Every time they went to a black community, when we used to have black communities, they would always, a lot of them would run them out of town. They don't want to have no problems. They don't want to deal with what he bringing to the table. We still dealing with that same rhetoric right now. It's just not in the same language. And when I say the same language, they're not saying the same thing, but it means the same thing. They don't want to hear what you're saying. Like y'all brothers, how many times have you ran across a couple of people that you just, it might be some brothers in a grocery store or something just mean mugging you for whatever reason. You just practicing black self-respect. You wanted to just greet that brother like, hey, you know, I do a radio show, you know what I'm saying, on Black Talk Radio Network, you know what I'm saying, you ought to check that out. And then they give you this crazy look, or either might go a little bit further and just say something crazy to you. Now imagine that right now compared to back then when they were still getting lynched and hung. People as it was fighting, it was a lot of people that was not. I'm listening though, brother. This y'all show. I'm sorry. No.
We love the dialogue, because what we want to do here is to create an open forum for solving problems, and everything is through question and answer. So we welcome that. So please don't never feel like you're intruding anything of that nature. So this is what this program is for, to be open and to dialogue. Hopefully, you know, we can get more callers like you that's willing to share their ideals, because we're not the so-called progenitors of black thought. We're just basically throwing things out, trying to break code. I believe that this system is primarily psychological. What do I mean by that? I think they have basically created an environment to where people cannot structurally do anything outside the bounds of what white supremacy has brought forth. So all your solutions, everything that you think of, everything you're thinking about trying to solve this problem, is built into what they have done and what they have basically accomplished. We have already stated that we know that there's going to be constant killing, constant murders, people that we have, black people that are willing to fight already, right? Or people that are into the classification of black. What we do not have is a unified front psychologically. We're not unified psychologically. They're unified psychologically. There is a stream of consciousness that they believe in whiteness. That whole thing about being white is a real thing, just like us being black. But see, here's the thing about being black: there's no power in it. And the thing is that it's not connected to a source to dominate other groups of people. See, that's the environment that they have created. They have created, this is a bad metaphor, but they have created a stacked football team. They got all the players, they got all the ways and everything in that ain't nature, and then you got to go play on their field. Home field advantage, right? You're never at home. Man. You're always playing on their field. In fact, we're going to give you the ball. We're going to give you the rules for the ball. You don't set the rules, but you're going to still have to learn how to play this game. Hey, that's what we're in right now.
Let your listeners know that you also mentioned that we're going to give you the ball, but we're going to set the rules.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
absolutely
a big part of it right there. And a lot of times, like you say.
So just think about what that does to our children, though. Think about what that does to our children. So, because our children don't understand this, they're trying to understand why they're called white and why we're called black. Right. Like, can you imagine a child asking you that? And you got to walk around and try to talk about, and you got statues, you know, we in the D.C. area, so you got statues of Robert E. Lee up, you got statues of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, people that rape people, you know what I'm saying, and created this country. And these are basically people that have just spilt their whole gene pool as far as like what their ideas of what life should be about, and that you have to explain this to your children.
You know what I do with that? Because we have a whole like what is the Confederate battlefield? I think it's like 50 acres. It's like 50 acres of just statues, cannons, different places where blood been spilt. I take my children down there. I do. I take my children down there. I let them know who done this, why they done this, and the reason that they done this.
And see, that's the beginning. That's the beginning, though, brother.
Most people don't do that.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I got a friend of mine, because I do a show too, and hopefully I'll be side by side with y'all, because we have these conversations on a daily basis. Like I said, Brother Scotty here, he didn't send me a message or what have you, but he sent the message and I seen it, and I just wanted to see what y'all brothers was about. And like I said, I enjoyed the conversation most definitely. I tried to get on earlier, but it wasn't working, so I decided I was just going to see if I could speak and let y'all know I was on. But it's been a most definitely, y'all have really been putting y'all been grinding the gears. Y'all been grinding the gears tonight, and I appreciate that, man, because it needs to be more of us doing this same thing. But to answer your question, though, I think about this stuff, and I don't know if y'all listen to Tando. That was the show that started a little bit earlier than y'all. And I was just telling the brother Dave, who run that show, is that the questions, because as much as I feel the way that I feel, and you three brothers feel the way that you feel, your children are going to be the ones that's going to answer those questions. So what I do, I have five children. I have four daughters and I have one son. I ask all of my children the same question. I never get the same answer. But the answer that they give me initially is never their last answer. See what I'm saying? So I always keep their mind turning. And like I said, I take them down to the Confederate battlefield. Everything is interesting, especially to my son, because he's number four on the list of five. So everything is interesting. But after he get interested in it, I let him know what it was used for. I let him know why they even started this battle to have this part. And it always sparks something in his brain. So these are just a few of the tactics that I use. And like I said, I'm just glad y'all accepted me to be able to talk with y'all, because I've been listening to y'all for about the last hour and a half. So I appreciate y'all letting me talk, man. And I'll let y'all go ahead on and do y'all thing.
Hey, man, appreciate you. Thanks for sharing. And always feel free to give us a call. And, you know, share whenever you want to. We appreciate you, brother. Paradox, do you have anything you want to add? I know you haven't spoken in a while.
No, that was good stuff, man.
T?
No, I think I appreciate the dialogue. It's, like I said, it's always good to hear from the listeners, to get a idea of what people are thinking, and I don't think we get a whole lot of callers, and I've even heard that maybe people can share what they think, but I've heard that sometimes it can be some of the stuff that we say maybe needs to be slowed down. I think that was the word that was used, or made a little more simpler on a Dr. Francis Cress Welsing type breakdown. And my response to them was that we're not Dr. Francis Cress Welsing.
That's for sure.
That's a tall order.
Yeah. We definitely would do our best to to ensure that we're not spreading confusion and that we will continue to try to alleviate confusion as best as possible. So,
I can't speak for y'all. I'm just a student, a confused victim, as we say sometimes. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thinking of another elder. Go ahead, Paymas.
I'm just saying, no credit. I'm no credit at all. Go ahead.
No, just going to say, I'm thinking of another elder, Dr. John Henry Clark. How he mentioned that marching is just a waste of good shoe leather and gas and energy. That came to mind when you talked about one of you all mentioned marching. So,
you know, one of the things I would suggest for victims of racism is just like the brother shared with us from Chattanooga, the best thing that we could do is not lie to our children. Be as honest as possible. Once they're even able to form words, and lay them out with nothing but the truth. That's the least that we can do.
Is the other half gonna let that take place?
Like I said, for people that are listening to this program,
I'm just making a point that you have. You know,
you're right. You're right. You're right. That's true.
The whole point of the story is for protection and assimilation, for protection, for safety, for security. That's why I had asked the question even at the beginning. You know, from the topics list. You know, who's providing our protection? Because you can't tell someone to tell the truth without making sure that you tell them that it's dangerous. That family members and friends is gonna counter what you're saying to try to say, you know what, your father's crazy. Do this and do this and do this. You know, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, let me know. We can have that conversation because you know how that gets, right?
Oh yeah,
I do.
And then you throw the church members into that too.
Go ahead, brother.
I just because after the brother was speaking, I understand exactly what he's saying because my mother one of the things that she used to tell me, and now my mother is 63 years old. So she used to tell me all the time that I'm gonna have my son, because my daughters listen to me, but they don't verbalize what they learn to me. Like I see it when they interacting with other children, black and white, mm-hmm. and whatever else. I see it with them, but with my son, he verbalizes it. He speaks what's on his mind. So when my mother asks him questions, he tells her what he thinks. And she came to me and she was like, "Jerry, you're going to have him hating people." I say, "No, it ain't about him hating people. He just recognizes what's going on. Because he plays with, you know, I have to go to work every day. You know, I do the radio show. And then I do a few other things. And then I have my big family that I have. Well, not big, because my grandmother just died. She had 20 children. So I can't say I had a big family. But I have 5. So that's enough for me, right? But he does everything, and he verbalizes everything that he does. And she was afraid that he was going to hate white people. I was like, "No, he's not going to hate white people. He's not going to hate nobody. He just recognizes what goes on." And as far as for the people who tell you not to do that to your children, whether it's your parents or what have you, all four of us on this call right now, and anybody else who's listening, we all grown. These are your children. If you got a problem with your spouse, you don't take that out in front of your children. You talk to your spouse and make sure that she knows or that he knows what you're doing and why you're doing it. Like my mother, I made sure that she knew, because she didn't have the time to do that with me. You know, I took care of my younger brother. And when I went to my father's house, I took care of my younger sister. So I would tell them certain things that they never even thought of, at least that I knew about. But years down the road, they come back to me. It's like, I'm glad you told them that, Jerry. I don't know where you got that from, but I appreciate that you told them that, because it helped them in certain situations that I never thought would have came about. You know, you can't always worry about what somebody else telling you, because y'all brothers have the truth inside of y'all. You have to spread that. You can't be scared to offend somebody, because if you do, then you're going to smother out your own light. Does that make sense?
Agreed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Definitely. And I echo that, because just like you said, I mean, it alleviates confusion. The biggest strength to this system is psychological. Believe it or not, that's manifest through physical.
Yeah, that is the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Yeah, absolutely. It is a system based off genetic survival, whether subconsciously or consciously. They're going to do whatever they need to do to survive. It don't...
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm sorry, man, because I do like to talk, and I apologize for this.
No, this is good.
I talked about Barack Obama being the first black president, right? Well, we know that his mother was white. And everybody else in the United States knows that.
Absolutely.
But when these white people look at him, though, what does that tell them? This is what happens when these races intermix.
There you go. What happens to them? They no longer
exist.
They
weren't mad about his policies, because if we look at the policies, he done everything for them. Right. I mean, I said that when I first came on to the show, is that I don't really like none of the stuff that he done. He didn't do nothing for us. But the fact that they have to look, no matter what the policies are that he done passed, they have to look at this brother who has a white mother. His father was black. So now we have the first black president. Do you know the psychological damage that happened to them? Do you remember all of the hanging nooses and the burning dummies that they had representing Barack Obama?
Not only that, but the attack on his daughters. He has daughters. They attacked his daughters. They attacked his wife. They attacked his stepmother. I mean, not stepmother, but his mother-in-law. But that's the point. That's the point.
You know, it's funny you say that, because the article I was telling you about up in Washington State, up in some of the school systems, you had some of the whites and non-whites pushing Black Lives Matter. And typical, obviously, they had I guess one story, you know, who knows what's true and what's not, but you had one story where the seven-year-old white child is telling his mother and father that he feels or she feels bad about being white because of all the, you know, the discussion they're having in the school systems about, you know, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, well,
I've read about that.
So if the child at seven already knows, that it knows that it's white, and this is 2017, then I was doing the math, so I'm thinking, well, for the next 80 years, right, because the child lives to 70 or 80, so for another 80, you know, it's like you were saying, I think, earlier, DC, about, I forgot what you had mentioned, but it had me thinking about that, just because, you know, they keep telling you that race don't exist, or race is less of an issue, or race isn't an issue, or things are more, you know, more whatever they're supposed to be, and then you get a seven-year-old kid who's aware of its whiteness and feels threatened by blackness at seven.
Acutely.
And then the parents writes a letter to the school board saying, y'all have to stop talking about black... I'm paraphrasing a bit, but y'all have to stop talking about Black Lives Matter because, you know, because my child feels bad about being white. at 7. But liberal whites, the Democrats, all those left wingers and all that trash that they talk about, whatever they talk about, it's fascinating. And that was the whole point of the story, obviously, is to say that, you know, you have these, you know, quote unquote white liberals. I mean, this stuff doesn't really mean anything to me, of course, but you have these white liberals who have little babies. You know, shout out to the cow. Gus does a great, consistent job week in and week out.
Man, I love
of explaining to people that you have teenagers and preteens that still not only are aware that they're white, they recognize their whiteness, they worship their whiteness, their parents and grandparents reinforce their whiteness, and as we always talk about, all of those trillions of dollars all get passed down and transferred, you know, to those white children. All the land ownership, 90%+ of the land that's owned by whites gets transferred to the white, you know, to the white children. You know, all of the lobbyists, all of the owners, the board of directors, the CEOs of companies, all, you know, all that gets transferred down to these white kids. I mean, it's the scary part is that it's right in your face. The scary part is that they write articles about it. You know, if you just search, I think Gus had mentioned about a month ago. What was it? Probably sometime last year. He was saying how just Google race, and just articles just pop up weekly about race constantly at all levels: school board, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools. I think right now we're having an issue. Not having an issue now, but even in this state where they're finding the looses everywhere. What was it, last week? This week?
Yes,
you're exactly right.
And the week before, they had this decapitated head down the street from me in Georgia.
Yeah. So we're seeing it all happen in real time.
Neela Fuller Jr., his book, man, is something that we all need to read and take into deep account. Hold on, let me grab this book. Let me tell you what the name was so I don't chop it up.
Oh, you're talking about the United, compensatory. Yeah, the United...
The United Independent Compensatory Code System.
Absolutely. Workbook. Absolutely.
Yeah, I got the book and the workbook. I got them both. I got Dr. Wilson's book. Also, when I was started to read Dr. Wilson's book, she mentioned a book by the name of Racial Matters. And this was written by a white dude, and he was on the cows. But for the young brother who was just speaking, what Gus says is a racist white man, racist white woman, racist white child. Mm-hmm. That's what he says.
Hey, T, you got... Go ahead, brother.
You know what? I'm gonna put myself on mute, and I'm gonna let y'all go ahead on, because I done said enough. But I appreciate y'all giving me the time.
No problem.
When y'all thank y'all. I will be tuning in more for sure.
No problem. DCT, can y'all get ready for your final comments? So we're about to close out. Y'all have any final thoughts before Mr. Reed closes out?
Well, white people are not confused about racism. White people are not confused about racism. They're going to do everything to protect themselves within this system. And once we grasp that, then we'll be able to grasp and be able to actually figure out strategic ways psychologically on how to deconstruct the system. Those are my final thoughts.
My final thoughts are just to be honest with ourselves and realize and understand things for what they really are and not take it as being disparaging or negative and use that as a point to go forth from there.
All right, I would just say, well, we do appreciate the callers, as well as always, thanks to Black Talk Radio Network. And coming up on our next program, we're going to probably touch on, we do a little bit more discussion on the military, also some cyber tech conversations, new machines. New tech machines that are out there. We didn't get a chance to touch on it too much also a little bit more discussion on the Navy, how things are set up across the planet as far as controlling the waterways, commerce, etc. A few of the topics we probably have coming up as well on the next program. And that is it. This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox.
This is D.
This is T.
Until next time, peace.